Meeting of Parliament, Monday, 22nd June 2015. Order of the day, Day. First and second reading. 1. A bill for an act to appropriate sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st day of March 2016, and further sums of money to the service of the year ending 31st day of March 2014. The Honourable the Chief Minister.
In particular, I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to appropriate sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st day of March 2016, and further sums of money to the service of the year ending 31st of March 2014, be read at first time.
I now put a question, which is whether a bill for an act to appropriate sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st day of March 2016, and further sums of money to the service of the year ended 31st of March 2014 be read a first time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. The Appropriations Act 2015.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill now be read a second. Mr. Speaker, this is my 12th budget session as a member of this Parliament, and my 4th budget address, Mr. Chief Minister. And I now have the honour to present the government's revenue and expenditure estimates for the year ending the 31st of March 2016. I will also report to the House on the government's revenue and expenditure outturn for the year ending the 31st of March 2015, which marked the third full financial year of a socialist liberal administration since we took office in December 2011. Mr. Speaker, it has been traditional to show the farmers first grasp the economic lessons for us as a people. But this budget address will include not just my report to the House on the public finances of our nation and the state of our economy generally, but also a review of many other pertinent matters affecting our economic outlook, making this very much more than just an address on the second reading of an appropriation bill, but a state of the nation as well. I will also, of course, outline the budget measures that this government will introduce this year in pursuance of its manifesto commitments and in order to continue to address the social and business needs of our community. This year, Mr. Speaker, I will also be undertaking a review of the work we have done in the time since we were elected, highlighting how the budgets I have introduced in this House have helped deliver a stronger, more prosperous, and more secure nation. Mr. Speaker, in terms of the quality of our democracy, we have now had 34 meetings of the House since our election. We have demonstrated our commitment to democratic reform, not least in opening up our debates to video cameras, which has transformed the way the public interacts with this government and with this Parliament when in session. But we still have some work to be done, and some of it will shortly be introduced. But the work of this Parliament is advanced and modernised hugely, and people know, see, and feel that. Perhaps the most exciting development to come shortly, Mr. Speaker, will be the debate on a Freedom of Information Act, which will fulfil one of our important manifesto commitments. Last year, during the course of this debate, I spoke of my decision to introduce legislation to create a Chief Minister's Consultative Council. After the intervention of the Honourable Backbencher, I agreed it should be called the Gibraltar Consultative Council. Mr. Speaker, the legislation has already been published as both a command paper and now as a bill, and can be proceeded with by the Parliament before the Senate. I look forward to leading the debate on that day also. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, no one can argue that we have not delivered anything other than root and branch parliamentary reform, adopting already many of the key proposals of the Commission on such reform which we presided over. Even the reference to command papers demonstrates how things have changed, and the level of consultation which there now is, where possible, in relation to legislation in new areas. This year, the Parliament has been involved in the preparation of a new register of electors. Already much work has been done in this respect, and the year will see a general election held. This will, as ever, require huge organisational effort, and on behalf of all members, I want to thank the members of your team for the work they have done and do to support us in our work as parliamentarians, whilst they also do the hard work of delivering a new register ready for the general election. Thank you all very much indeed for this. speak, I want in particular to congratulate Ms. Frances Gavner for her receipt of the Gibraltar Award for her services. Frances is a joy to work with and always a huge help to all of us who need her. She is blind to what side the member sits on or to party the affiliation, and she is selfless in always being ready to go above and beyond the call of duty for members of this House. Other public officers, indeed, or any member of the public who may need her assistance as a servant of this House. Our award is well deserved. The World Bank outlook on global economic prospects considers the developing countries face a series of tough challenges in 2015, which will result in a fourth consecutive year of disappointing economic growth this year. Developing countries are now projected to grow by 4.4% this year, with a likely rise of 5.2% in 2016 and 5.4% in 2017. World Bank Group President Jim Yong Kim said as part of that report that the World Bank Group believes that countries that invest in people's education and health, improve the business environment and create jobs through upgrades and infrastructure will emerge much stronger in the year ahead. That is exactly the sort of investment we are making, Mr. Speaker. Because we face a period of some uncertainty in many respects, where the greatest certainty is offered by our own determination. It is not clear, Mr. Speaker, whether the Eurozone will end the week with Greece as a member or not. In Spain, the effects of economic and chaotic departure of Greece from the Euro could create major economic problems once again. The EU referendum is now a reality, and we ourselves are going to see that Parliament has to send further decisions to provide for the vote in Gibraltar. Mr. Speaker, our future is in Europe, in access to the single market. But what will that market look like in 2 years, and what will be the shape of the renegotiated proposals put to us as British people? Mr. Speaker, we have seen the effects of the past 7 years of crisis in Europe. In Spain, some children still only eat at school because their parents are unable to provide nutrition at home. As ever, Mr. Speaker, we can but wish to see positive developments for the economy of our neighbouring nation. The less the Spanish government might consider that it needs to deflect attention away from economic woes at home, the less likely we are to be the defamed scapegoat. In this respect, Mr. Speaker, I was, as most Gibraltarians would have been, unsurprised to hear Spanish tax minister Señor Montoro once again nonsensically suggesting that Gibraltar should be on the EU tax haven list. He was sorely disappointed, Mr. Speaker, and expressed his bitter disappointment in much in such media as were prepared to listen. I'm writing to him again, despite his failure to respond to my previous letter, setting out in black and white the many reasons why he is wrong in his analysis. The open letter will go later today, depending on what time we adjourn the House. More locally, Mr. Speaker, there has been a change of political parties in the municipality in La Línea, but we have already established contact with the new mayor and trust that we will be able to enjoy a cordial and mutually beneficial relationship for the good of both cities. For the UK, Mr. Speaker, the reputable accountancy council PwC reflects that economic growth was around 2.6% in 2014, the fastest in the G7, but is projected to slow to around 2.5% in 2015. This will be behind the US and Canada, but still the strongest of the large European economies. Last night, Mr. Speaker, I was at the opening of a second US trade mission into Gibraltar, organized by the American Chamber of Commerce in Gibraltar, where I was pleased to see that you and your lady wife were also present. I was very happy indeed to see that our initiative in spreading Gibraltar's business and political influence is bearing fruit. 14 US companies are visiting Gibraltar on this occasion. As you will see, the economic performance of Gibraltar is strong, and in great measure, despite the difficult times facing Europe and attempts by those outside of Gibraltar to stronger our economy and the efforts of some inside to talk it down, we have prospered because we continue to spread our wings as a government. We are leading the private sector and opening new avenues of trade and new routes into Gibraltar for international businesses. But the world, Mr. Speaker, is not just a place which we open ourselves to in business terms. It is also an increasingly dangerous place, we say, with transnational terrorism being a constant danger to peace-loving communities such as ours. We are not far enough from the disturbing problems in North Africa, and we must remain ever vigilant and support our law enforcement agencies in the work that they do to keep us safe, giving them the physical and legislative resources they need to do so. Mr. Speaker, with my government's last 3 budgets, this budget has been designed funds to support our working families, to support our youth and our students, and to support our senior citizens and our disabled. In personal terms, this is a budget for those who put their hands up to work and not for those who unfairly put their hands up to receive. Mr. Speaker, we are as ever stepping out to protect those who cannot work and not those who won't work. In corporate terms, this is a budget designed to encourage business, to encourage startups, to encourage our entrepreneurs, to improve our public services, and to deliver sustainable growth in our economy. In short, Mr. Speaker, it is a budget that reflects my government's mission to improve the quality of life and standard of living of all our citizens. Mr. Speaker, let me first start then by undertaking a detailed analysis of our own economic performance. Inflation in Gibraltar averaged at 1.8% in 2014 compared to 2.1% in 2013. Over the lifetime of this parliament, the average rate of inflation has been in the region of 2.75% a year. The government's statistics office reports that the largest contribution to the slowdown in the rate of inflation in April 2015 came from food, alcoholic drinks, as well as tobacco and fuel prices, and the slower price rises in clothing and footwear. These were partially offset by upward contributions from other travel and transport, the services industry, and housing. Falling prices are, however, expected to be short-lived, and prices are forecast to rise towards the end of the year or early next year, when the effects of the fall in oil prices and import prices of the weak euro begin to drop out of the annual rate. Mr. Speaker, the inflation rate is therefore expected to remain below 1% during 2015, rising towards the 2% target in 2016. Mr. Speaker, last year, I was able to tell the House that the figures then available in respect of GDP estimates, prepared by the Statistics Office, reflected that Gibraltar's gross domestic product for the financial year 11-12 was £1.17 billion. And that the GDP figure for 2013 was estimated at £1.28 billion, and the forecast for 2013-14 was £1.41 billion. These figures, as honourable members know, are annually recast as more reliable information comes in, and the estimate becomes a firmer calculation. Mr. Speaker, I'm still able to provide the House with firmer figures in respect of each of those years, with the latest information available from the professionals of the Statistics Office. The information available confirms our estimate at the time, an estimate made by the Honourable Mr. Bassano from the opposition benches, that the GDP for the year 10-11, 2010-2011, was £1.082 billion, i.e. literally just shy of, just £80 million shy of our estimate of £1.1 billion. An incredibly accurate prediction in the part of Mr. Bassano, the father of this House, demonstrating in clear and tangible terms why so many in this community who rightly have such a high regard for his ability to understand our economic model, one that he has largely been responsible for developing almost single-handedly. He loves this thing, he talks so positively about it. But the latest data available also reflects that for the financial year 2011-12, the first full year of the GSW Liberal administration, the GDP estimate of £1.17 billion must unfortunately be revised. Unfortunately, however, for those who would wish ill on this notion of ours, the revision is one to be made upward to a now more reliable figure of £1.2 billion. This represents a growth of 11% on the first year's GDP. For the financial year 2012-2013, the estimate last year was that GDP for that year had reached £1.28 billion, as I told the House a moment ago. In fact, that estimate also fell short of where the actual figures appear to be pointed. The final GDP estimate for the financial year 2012-13 is now more accurately stated by the Statistics Office, with the more real and up-to-date data available to them as being higher and in the region of £1.32 billion. Mr. Speaker, that represents an impressive growth in GDP terms for that year of 10%. The GDP figure forecast last year by the Statistics Office for 2013-14, as I told the House a moment ago, was then £1.41 billion. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the more accurate preliminary estimate now requires a further upward revision of £83 million, given an estimated GDP for the financial year 2013-14 of £1.484 billion. Mr. Speaker, that means the GDP growth for the year 2013-14 of 12.7% in money terms. Mr. Speaker, the figure that honourable members and the public will most want to know, however, is the forecast GDP for 2014-2015, i.e., the last financial year, which ended on the 31st of March 2015. Mr. Speaker, it gives me great pleasure and satisfaction to announce that the forecast of the Statistics Office for the gross domestic product for the last financial year 2014-2015 is now £1.64 billion. Mr. Speaker, that represents a GDP growth of 10.3% in money terms for that year. Another year, Mr. Speaker, of double-digit economic growth. Another major step forward for the Gibraltar economy. My pleasure, Mr. Speaker, is enhanced by the fact that our manifesto commitments to the people of Gibraltar have been to grow the size of our economy from £1.1 billion in 2011, where we accurately predicted the GDP to be, to £1.65 billion in 2015-2016. In fact, Mr. Speaker, we have reached £1.64 billion in the early estimate for the financial year 2014-15. As you have seen in the figures I've just been able to provide the House, it is likely that this figure will in any event be revised upwards next year as more detailed information is received by the Statistics Office. We have, in effect, reached the target that we believe was reachable in 4 years in just over 3.25. A truly remarkable achievement, Mr. Speaker, although I expect our opponents will now want to airbrush aside their skepticism when we embarked on this ambitious endeavour 3.5 years ago. Most importantly, Mr. Speaker, we have reached in 3 years the target that many of those proposals said could not be reached in 4. Ironically, Mr. Speaker, it is those who said we could not reach our GDP target who continue to make the mistake of saying that we cannot achieve other things we propose for the benefit of our community. They should learn the lesson of our constantly proving them wrong. I'm sure, Mr. Speaker, that during the course of his address in this life, the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition will want to congratulate us for this massive success in achieving our ambitious growth target a year earlier. And that, of course, means, Mr. Speaker, that in GDP, that these GDP figures demonstrate that by the end of the next financial year, that is to say, the end of 2015-2016, we will not just have comfortably reached our target of £1.65 billion, requiring only a growth of £10 million in our economy to achieve that, but we will have comfortably exceeded our predictions, achieved our target, and delivered for our people even greater economic growth than we had predicted. And to think, Mr. Speaker, that they said it could not be done. Well, this increased level of growth in our economy during the past 3 years, with an average growth rate of over 10% per annum, in nominal terms, means that Gibraltar continues to rank among the fastest growing economies in the world. That is the product of our collective efforts as a community. That is the effect of our hard work as a nation. That is another reason for us all to be proud of our iron determination as a people. This is now break down per capita, Mr. Speaker, because the GDP per capita of an economy is often used as an indicator of the average standard of living of individuals in a country, and economic growth is therefore often seen as indicating an increase in the average standard of living. Mr. Speaker, per capita on a GDP of £1.64 billion, that gives us an estimated GDP of £50,941 per person using the latest published figure of population of 32,194 people, which was published last week in the census. In US dollar terms, taking the monthly average US dollar rate for the calendar year 2014, which is $1.64 to the pound sterling, the GDP per capita stands in dollar terms at £83,544. Mr. Speaker, to together, what we have achieved with the leadership of this GSLP Liberal administration is to maintain Gibraltar once again in third place in the International Monetary Fund World Economic Outlook database of GDP per capita ranking. Third place out of 187 countries. We trail only Luxembourg with a GDP per capita of $92,000 and Qatar with a GDP per capita of $143,000. I tell the House of Commons, Mr. Speaker, that my view is that these measures are not entirely scientific because of differing methodologies and fluctuating exchange rates, but the animators of the rest of the world derive them. And I'm reminded that the Honourable Backbencher used to get great score by this measure when he used to make the announcement. Mr. Speaker, when we took over in December 2011, Gibraltar had placed none on that index. None. I am very proud indeed that we have risen to third in the time of my leadership of our small nation. Indeed, although the whole of my ministerial team feels huge pride in this respect, because I would also call on the wider community to feel that pride too. Because this is the achievement of all of us combined, the product of the work of us all as a people. As was the case last year, the main drivers for this positive growth, Mr. Speaker, are primarily the continuing increased employment and turnover in the online gaming and financial services industries, and the very increased levels of construction now evident in our economy, with the private sector taking more and more of the lead in that respect. And Mr. Speaker, one of the most exciting things that is happening in our economy is now the rise of the private sector as the main driver of GDP growth for the future. So, Mr. Speaker, having almost entirely delivered our main manifesto commitments, and being in the process of delivering those still not finalized, we can now see that the private sector is in fact starting to work on developments that were previously just not moving off. The World Trade Center is now becoming a reality. Two new blocks of flats at Ocean Village are likely to start construction in the next 12 to 24 months. T29, alongside King's Wharf, is expected to break ground in the same time frame, with the public benefiting from us from our insistence of the government in the reduction of the height of that development. The same developers are already talking to government about the development of the site at Coney Island, where there may shortly be an announcement of another interesting development involving further reclamation, which will also provide a huge boost to GDP and will involve positive effects on government revenues by way of premium. The Midtown development is already underway. This development, importantly, Mr. Speaker, will not benefit from the government investing £20 million in the equity of it, as the previous administration had planned on doing. But it is going ahead, reducing size after we push for a better deal for the taxpayer. The area of Victory Place is also slated to begin development in the next 12 to 24 months, and Rook is shortly to be handed over and will be the subject of a request for expressions of interest for its development also. A number of potential uses could provide major economic value for Gibraltar beyond the simple redevelopment of flats or offices, and there may be an interest in combining it also with some social or community uses. But Mr. Speaker, the best example of private sector investment is the recent announcement made by the Deputy Chief Minister and myself in the set of the side. Mr. Speaker, Blue Water Resort will equate to an investment in Gibraltar of a total of £1.1 billion of outside investment into Gibraltar. The largest amount of money ever invested in our nation. £1.1 billion represents a huge boost for our GDP, not funded by the government and the taxpayer, but from investors from outside Gibraltar. In addition, Mr. Speaker, the developers will be building affordable homes on the east side plot and in the area currently occupied by the Customs Department at Waterford. They will be financing the development of the affordable homes, with the government being able to purchase in partnership with the home buyer at the end of the building period, should the purchaser require. Mr. Speaker, the Ombudsman states in the introduction to his recently tabled report for 2014, when referring to the 900 affordable homes about to be delivered, that without doubt, and this is the truth, this development has done away with the huge pressures that the housing authority has historically been subjected to, and that judging by present trends, we could for the first time see housing issues being removed from the top of the complaints list. Mr. Speaker, the government believes that the development and delivery of these additional 1,700 homes, which we announced last week, will achieve exactly that. Of course, Mr. Speaker, the decision to invest $1.1 billion is also a huge statement of confidence in our economy, in our public finances, and in our partners' stewardship of our nation's affairs. It demonstrates, in real terms, that whatever else might be said about public finances and our economy, when we are x-rayed by outside investors, they see what they like and give no credibility to the hell and brimstone being preached by others. Another great driver for economic growth for our future, Mr. Speaker, will be the establishment of an entirely safe, liquefied natural gas storage, regasification, and bunkering facility. The government's discussions with interested parties suggest that the facility is likely to be financed entirely by third parties, giving the government the option to invest in such facilities, but not requiring us to do so. This will be the beginning of a new industry for Gibraltar, which, given current predictions, is likely to dominate the maritime transport industry in coming years. Recent statements from Carnival Corporation demonstrate that even the maritime leisure industry sees LNG as a safe and less polluting fuel, which is the future. If the city of Gibraltar needs to be at the forefront of these developments, if we want to continue to be the largest bunkering port in the Mediterranean. I know Gibraltarians are proud to say that we are such a port, and we not want to see the bunkering industry disappear from Gibraltar as diesel slowly disappears as the fuel of choice in that market. Ill-informed comments and opportunistic scaremongering, Mr. Speaker, will not blind the people of Gibraltar to the importance of developing our bunkering industry in that way. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the government expects that the mature proposals it will put before the people of Gibraltar in respect of the LNG facility will be markedly safer than the operation of aircraft within the distances currently relevant between the airport and residential areas. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, we confidently believe that the risk analysis to be put before the people will show that there is a greater chance of an airline pilot or an air traffic controller making a human error and landing or directing an aircraft onto waterport territory or Marina Bay or Grasses or Laguna than the risk of anything going wrong with the operation of an LNG facility. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, members of the public will know that operations with aircraft fuel, known as Jet A1, are hugely more dangerous than operations with LNG. And yet, Jet A1 refueling operations are carried out each day within spitting distance of millions of airline passengers outside of Gibraltar and here within meters of residential facilities like Laguna, Grasses, Donald Tower Camp, and Four Corners. Nuclear power submarines have long been made welcome in Gibraltar and berthed within short distances of established residential areas, and very welcome they are too, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, air traffic controllers at Gibraltar reputedly land large and unwieldy military aircraft loaded with missiles and warheads to refresh those on board those nuclear powered submarines, and they think nothing of it. Never mind the potential consequences something went wrong once in 100 million years with one of those, Mr. Speaker. But there are some who won't face the fact and will allow these things to get in the way. Nothing will get in the way for them of a spurious argument when they are not the ones making the decisions, Mr. Speaker. And it is not just the government of Gibraltar and the most responsible governments and organizations around the world that are working on the basis of the safety of LNG as a fuel, as we have seen from the Carnival announcement 2 weeks ago. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, in years to come, LNG bunkering facilities in Gibraltar are likely to make it attractive not just as a bunkering port, but also as a cruise port, given that the Carnival lead is likely to be followed by other cruise operators. In a nutshell, Mr. Speaker, in an American cruise corporation, risk averse and mitigation averse as they naturally are, is prepared to have 6,000 passengers sleeping on top of a gas storage and regasification facility, then we can understand that with proper planning and technology, we can operate a safe LNG storage, regasification, and power plant. But Mr. Speaker, we all in this place know that. It's just that some just don't know what else to say to try and scare a few more people into waiting for them. But anyway, let's move on to other matters. Mr. Speaker, one of the largest components of our GDP growth is, of course, the growing levels of employment in our economy. The number of jobs in our economy is at a record high of 24,422. This represents almost a 16.4% increase since 2010. In comparison with October 2011, the last survey relevant to the current honourable members in office, the growth has been huge, in particular in terms of Gibraltarianism jobs. Year-on-year growth, Mr. Speaker, in respect of this hugely important figure, the number of our compatriots in full-time employment has been superb. In terms of all Gibraltarianism employment, whether full or part-time, once again, we are breaking records. In October 2011, when we took over, the total number of Gibraltarians in employment had suffered a huge decrease under the previous PSD administration. The figure had sunk by 4.5% from the year before under the previous administration. In fact, in October 2011, the total number of Gibraltarians in employment was 10,220, having fallen by 486 in just 1 year. In just our first year of administration, the figure of Gibraltarians in employment, full or part-time, jumped by a huge increase of 511. But it's the same, Mr. Speaker. In 1 year, we were able to see more Gibraltarians find jobs than have lost their jobs in the year before. 486 have lost their jobs in the last year under the members opposite, while 511 found jobs under us, even though we had to stop all the government projects because the members opposite had left us almost no usable cash reserve. In percentage terms, Mr. Speaker, what the GSP saw diminished by 4.5%, we increased by 5% in just 1 year. A stunning reversal, Mr. Speaker, of the bad fortune many had suffered, losing their jobs during the last days of the previous administration. The final figure of Gibraltarians in employment in 2012 was a vast 10,731. In the following year, reporting the survey of October 2013, the number went up again from 10,731 by a further 126 to 10,857, or 1.2%. Another record year, the highest figure ever for Gibraltarians in employment at the time. And this year, Mr. Speaker, I am delighted to be able to inform the House that the total number of Gibraltarians in employment has risen again and is up by 134 jobs, or 1.2% in the year from October 2013 to October 2014, taking the total from 10,857 to 10,991. Another record year, Mr. Speaker. Again, Mr. Speaker, more Gibraltarians at work than ever before. And as Socialist and Liberal Party, Mr. Speaker, this is the part of our record of which we are proudest. Creating sustainable employment. Putting people to work, Mr. Speaker. Real jobs bringing real dignity to the lives of real people. The people, Mr. Speaker, who members of opposition used to say were unemployable because they could not understand how to make the job market work for our people as well as it works for others. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, members opposite used to say that 300 registered unemployed would constitute full employment. Actually, Mr. Speaker, as we say in the hostages to fortune, which one can see developing in Gibraltar politics these days, that phrase lies on the lips of the now leader of the opposition, who uttered the phrase in a television program with the Honourable Mr. Bassano, as I understand it. Well, the latest unemployment figures available to the Ministry of Employment tell us that the number unemployed in Gibraltar is now 190. Not 300, Mr. Speaker, not 200, Mr. Speaker, but 190. I would therefore expect that the Honourable Leader of the Opposition will also want to congratulate the government for that remarkable achievement during the course of his address. By his standards, Mr. Speaker, we have achieved full employment. And we have done so despite 486 Gibraltarians having lost their jobs in the year up to October 2011, 2 months before members opposite were themselves dismissed by the great Gibraltarian public. But one Gibraltarian unemployed, Mr. Speaker, who genuinely wants a job, is one unemployed person too many as far as we are concerned. We consider any person's unemployment to be a sovereign issue for that person, for him or our family, and a matter which we must work with them to resolve. So we will not rest on our laurels, Mr. Speaker, and we will not just be there to help people find jobs. We are also here to help people improve themselves and to better themselves. And that is why we are providing continuing education for those who want it, because we want to help people also to develop. And the two ministers who have been involved in the Ministry of Employment and her election deserve praise in this respect. The brilliant Jane O'Donnell broke the back of the I think it's rather an attachment than brilliant, we enjoy it more. The brilliant Jane O'Donnell broke the back of unemployment, and the efficient and disciplined Neil Costa demonstrated his great ability by improving even further on Jane's huge achievements over the 3 years in the Senate. I am proud indeed to share a cabinet with both of them, and I promise that I'll say nothing nice about him for the rest of the system until he's gone and comes. Let us look also at what has happened to the earnings of those in employment in the time that we have been in office. Mr. Speaker, average annual earnings in Gibraltar were £23,575 in 2010. 23,575. By 2014, average annual earnings in Gibraltar had grown to £28,244. Almost a 19.8% increase in average annual earnings under this administration. Almost exactly 20%, Mr. Speaker. Inflation to the state for the same period is 13.5%, giving earnings an inflation adjusted headwind in that period of 6.3%. So we are delivering, Mr. Speaker, double-digit GDP growth, alongside double-digit growth in the job market and double-digit growth in average annual earnings. A double whammy of growth, Mr. Speaker, in respect of every positive economic indicator. I don't see them clapping up against me. Are they not happy that we need development for the people of the world, I wonder? Mr. Speaker, the level of gross public debt as of the 31st of March 2015 was lower than last year, at £448 million. This one is already £72 million lower than the level we inherited of £520 million. The level of cash reserves estimated to have ended the financial year at around £72 million. That means that we have exceeded the estimate for cash reserves, which the government has anticipated it to be £70 million, by £2.3 million. Another very positive development is the estimate being exceeded by better than expected economic performance. Our current estimate is that cash reserves will hit £85 million next year. If you think of effect, this reflects a net public debt at £375 million, or 22.8% of GDP. If our borrowing level continues to be low in relation to the size of our economy, and as a percentage of GDP is currently amongst the lowest of the countries in the European Union. This is so even if we were to include the borrowing of some government-owned companies, which, as honourable members know, is not and never has been deemed to be part of the public debt. Since borrowing by government-owned companies secured solely against the assets held by those companies and is serviced directly from income derived by the government-owned companies. As a percentage of annual recurrent government revenue in the previous year, net public debt carried forward to the 1st of April 2015 was 65%. This is a clear margin, Mr. Speaker, of 15%, around £82 million, of further borrowing capacity or permissible drawings from useful cash reserves under the Public Finance Borrowing Powers Act. And it compares very favorably indeed with usable cash reserves of just £20 million when this government took office on the 9th of December 2011 and just 2.5 million, sorry, at the end of March 2012. Mr. Speaker, I was pleased to be able to table in the House at the beginning of the session in the context of the management of our public debt, the renewal of the government that the government has managed to agree in respect of the £50 million revolving loan facility with the Royal Bank of Scotland for a further period of 5 years up to the 31st of March 2020. The interest payable in the loan is LIBOR plus 0.875%. And Mr. Speaker, I would like to commend the financial sector for having negotiated and arranged this excellent loan facility, which will provide the government with additional flexibility in the management of the public debt. Mr. Speaker, the low margin agreed on this loan is also a reflection of the increasing level of confidence by international financial institutions in our economy and government. And this, Mr. Speaker, despite a backdrop of locally engineered negativity. a negative story about the state of our public finances. Mr. Speaker, in fact, the government continues to be fully committed to reducing the level of public debt, and we expect that in the coming months in particular, with exceptional income expected, this will fall to the region of half the level that it was when we took office. Indeed, just the sale of some apartments would provide a considerable payment to government funds for purchases, given the numbers of them. However, Mr. Speaker, public debt is expected to edge upwards again in the latter part of the financial year, given that there will be, at some stage, a new administration with new projects to start, to end the year with a gross public debt at around $400 million, down approximately $50 million, and net public debt at about $314 or $50 million, representing a further significant reduction during the financial year. Mr. Speaker, it is hugely important to recall that at the time we took over as a government, the gross debt, which is the measure which used in every single measure of debt, was at $570 million. The gross debt of our nation has peaked at over £500 million on a GDP of £1.1 billion. In other words, Mr. Speaker, our gross debt under member opposite was 47% of GDP. And that was without including company debt, which is not and never has been included as part of the government debt. Today, it is clear, Mr. Speaker, that the gross debt is considerably lower than it was under the GDP. Indeed, put it to the exercise of the Speaker together in this House of looking at the debt in the context of the past 7 financial years since 2008, the first financial year after the 2007 general election, so that we look together at the lifetime of the last 2 parliaments and the lifetime of this parliament and until now. What is the history of 2 full parliaments tell us? In 2008, Mr. Speaker, the GDP was 898.7 million. The aggregate public debt, or the gross debt, the measure which really matters and which is the internationally accepted measure, was then 21.3% of GDP. 2008, 898.7, 21.3% of GDP. Net debt was 6.9% of GDP. The following year, the GDP was up to 1 billion, 2009. That was the time that members of opposition went on the largest spending spree in the history of Gibraltar politics. Before that term was up, they would from this moment go on to spend more in the 3 financial years that followed than they had spent in the previous 13. Unlucky to say. That year, Mr. Speaker, the gross debt jumped to an astonishing 38.4% of GDP. Yes, Mr. Speaker, a growth in gross debt in 1 year from 21.3% of GDP to 38.4% of GDP. That means that gross debt, Mr. Speaker, more than doubled in 1 financial year in the state of GDP. The gross debt actually increased by 80.3%. The most astonishing thing, of course, Mr. Speaker, is not just that the party opposite were in power at the time, but that the honourable now leader of the House, and the leader of the opposition, was Minister for Justice in that government. He expressed concerns about debt these days, Mr. Speaker, that he was a member of the government that more than doubled gross debt as a measure of GDP. In net debt terms, the debt went from 6.9% of GDP to 13.8% of GDP. It exactly doubled, in net debt terms. A 100% increase in the net debt, Mr. Speaker. And not over the lifetime of the Parliament, but in 1 financial year. So it's been quite incredible, Mr. Speaker, to see that the person who was a minister in such a government might now be concerned when gross debt is actually down at least to below the level that they left it at 520 million. But let us continue the exercise of looking at the debt as a percentage of GDP. Because honourable members on this side of the House will be very interested to hear how things pan out, and members of the House will no doubt on this issue also question the leader of the opposition's wisdom in having made debt such a central issue of his criticism of this government. By 2010, Mr. Speaker, debt had grown, GDP had grown, say, to £1.08 billion. Gross debt as a percentage of GDP continued to shoot up to 34.4% of GDP. 44.4%. Mr. Speaker, that is the high point of GDP to gross debt that our nation has ever had to labor under. The highest point of GDP to gross debt ratio. Not today, under this government, then under the GOP, Mr. Speaker. 44.4%. That means that for every pound that went to the calculation of the size of our economy, 44.5 pence was government debt, Mr. Speaker. Quite incredible. When Asia might have just started listening, they might think that this is the situation now, given the Helen Grimstone argument we hear constantly from the leaders of the opposition. But no, this is the position in 2010, when he was spending on courts and prisons, and his then leader was spending on airports. Gross debt, Mr. Speaker, shot up to £520 million, and there was a moment, Mr. Speaker, in that leaders' debate, which I have with the Honourable, now the backbencher then, the Chief Minister and Mr. Azapardi, where I think the sharp intake of breath from Mr. Azapardi and me when the Honourable, the leader of the House, announced that debt had shot up from the £480 million that we had been told to expect it to be in the estimate to £520 million, over £500 million, I think may even have been audible at home. From 21.3% of GDP, gross debt went up from 21.3% of GDP to 44.4% of GDP in 700 days in 2 years. That means that gross debt had grown by 108% in 2 years under the GOP, when the Honourable now leader of the opposition was Minister for Justice. And it makes uncomfortable listening for them, Mr. Speaker, but it's important for our nation to understand how the party that the Honourable Mr. Peter now leads had so debt when they were in government, despite what they are saying right now. Net debt in that year, 2010, went up to 19.1% of GDP, up from 6.9% 2 years earlier. A 13% increase, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our people need to understand that in those 2 years, the GOP, the members of it, Mr. Peter, the Honourable now leader of the opposition, amongst others, presided over an increase in net debt, not of 1.7%, not of 17%, but of 176.8%. 176% increase in net debt in 2 years. Mr. Speaker, talk about unprecedented growth, but perhaps of the wrong type. Imagine, Mr. Speaker, if we had grown debt by 176%, the other leader of the region would have made an application to court to have been burnt at the stake. Never mind, Mr. Speaker, the stake, or their stake, is about to get even better cooked. Although I do like mine well, Mr. Speaker, theirs is about to get very well done indeed. In their last year in office, Mr. Speaker, in 2011, GDP had grown to approximately 1.3 billion. That is the latest revised figure that has been made available to me by the Statistics Office, who do such a magnificent job of like-for-like calculations, and which I mentioned earlier, Mr. Speaker. Remember, Mr. Speaker, that for the first three quarters of that year, members opposite have been in government. For the last quarter of the financial year, the great newborn of the morning of the 9th of December 2011, which had swept in a new broom into power, was the SOB Liberal administration, which I proudly believe that was in power. The figure confronted by the memo from the then financial secretary, telling us that we had only £20 million of usable cash reserve. But the other members might recall that memo, Mr. Speaker. I think I referred to it in the short time frame, the doomsday memo from Mr. Bellion and the others last year, which told us that the usable cash reserve would fall to £2 million by the end of that financial year, the lowest it has ever been. We had to take some very painful decisions indeed. The position of the Speaker of the former Chief Minister, the Honourable Robert Benchus, the Speaker of the Honourable PC, at the ceremonial opening of the House, was to invite me to bring a resolution to the Parliament so that I would be free to borrow more, accepting in that way that the debt ceiling was to be reached if we continued to spend or burn money at the rates that we inherited. The most important decision we took was to stop all government projects which were still ongoing under the previous administration. Despite that third quarter of strict financial control, the year ended with a gross debt, Mr. Speaker, of 43.1% of GDP. those sets were 43.1% of GDP. Our full quarter of financial control resulted, Mr. Speaker, only in a reduction of 1.3% of gross debt to GDP, but it was at least as far. The net debt, Mr. Speaker, has continued to rise that year to 25.3% of GDP. Imagine where it would have gone if we hadn't stopped the program. That means that the net debt of our nation has gone up in the last 3 years of the administration by member governments from 6.9% of GDP to 25.3% of GDP. That increase, Mr. Speaker, is an increase of 266%. 266% increase in the net debt. Not now, when we hear all this criticism of debt, but in the final year that members of the group were in power. So, Mr. Speaker, the net debt as a share of GDP increases from 2009 to 2011 in the members of the group, with the honorable leader of the opposition then in government spending and business support and overspending impact of the country, by 266%. Speaker, how can the people who presided over such increases in racial terms now be speaking concern about net debt under this administration? The racial element is hugely important, of course, because it's about comparing the debt to the size of the economy. But that's how they left it. Now let's look at the position here. The debt is decreasing and the economy is growing. After 3.5 years of PSLP liberal administration, where are we taking Gibraltar in debt? Has it cured things or has the debt gone up? The speaker and doing this analysis, we look at the cash position, real terms, and ratio terms. The speaker has GDP estimate at the moment for this year, as I told the House of Members, £1.64 billion. Just below the position we anticipated it would be at the end of the 2015-16 financial year. I've said more about that already, Mr. Speaker. But gross debt is down to £448 million and will be going down even lower by the time of the election. That means a cash terms reduction, Mr. Speaker, from £520 million of gross debt by a total of £72 million already. And now, in ratio terms, Mr. Speaker, as a percentage of GDP, gross debt is down from 43.1%, as it was under the GSC, to 27.3%. Mr. Speaker, there is a reduction in gross debt of 36.6%. Mr. Speaker, there is a very creditable reduction in gross debt of almost 40% in just 3.5 years. And this is a percentage that has been reducing year on year. In 2012, the gross debt to GDP ratio had been a massive reduction from 43.1% to 28.5%. In 2013, a reduction to 29.6%, and ending, as I said a moment ago, at 27.3%. Mr. Speaker, I may say so, exactly the right direction of travel. And the same is true of net debt. From the GSC's historic high of 25.3%, net debt to GDP ratio of the last year, and obviously, Mr. Speaker, the net debt to GDP ratio has now been reduced to 22.9%. And the debt has reduced, revenue has increased, and expenditure has fallen as a ratio revenue. Mr. Speaker, I am in fact delighted to announce this now that during the last financial year, 2014-2015, we have once again achieved a budget surplus which is amongst the highest on record. The amount of the surplus this year is higher than any surplus ever predicted. It is higher than the surplus predicted last year. We have therefore once again exceeded our income by expenditure to a greater extent than predicted. Mr. Speaker, the estimate had been for a surplus of £34.65 million. In fact, I am very happy to report, both to the House and to the nation, that we have exceeded that estimate by a surplus of almost 50% more. Mr. Speaker, all will be, or at least should be, delighted to know that this year's budget reflects a surplus of revenue over expenditure standing at a staggeringly high £51.3 million. And let me add, Mr. Speaker, that this surplus is calculated after the deduction of £25 million as a contribution to the government company. Mr. Speaker, honourable members will be aware that the systematic contribution to the government company was a process commenced by this administration when we found ourselves, just after our election, staring at a blank hole in the company structure of £100 million. And with the government company losing money every year, which had to be made up in the consolidated fund, and for which there was no provision made by the previous administration. This year's contribution to the government company is, as I have said, £25 million. If we had followed the model of the previous administration, that is to say, if we were comparing like for like our calculations with those of members of it when they were in administration, if I had dealt with the surplus and the contribution to the government company as the previous leader of the House, the Peter Kavana, who some have even described as the greatest humanitarian of all time, we would have been declaring this year a surplus of £76.2 million. That would have been the highest surplus ever on record, Mr. Speaker. But instead of recklessly failing to fund the government company as they did, we prudently set aside £25 million above the line, and thereby reduced the surplus to a number less record-breaking £51.3 million. Still, the second highest actual surplus on record only after last year. Another GSLC liberal record year, Mr. Speaker. One after the other, Mr. Speaker, another record year of growth. One after the other, Mr. Speaker, another record year of deficit. But we are prudent, Mr. Speaker. We do not fund the company to fill in the black hole of expenditure left by the previous administration. We make sure that the money is there. And even then, we declare the second largest surplus in the history of our nation. And so that the public can understand the huge scale of this surplus being declared today, Mr. Speaker. It is more than twice the size of the biggest surplus ever declared by the GSC when it was. More than twice the size. And that, Mr. Speaker, despite the fact that they did not make above-the-line contributions to fund the government companies. Mr. Speaker, as in previous budgets, and in line with our manufacturing commitment to allow to go to community care trust to build up its reserves so we can once again be totally independent in government grants, I'm delighted to inform the House that out of this record budget surplus for the year, a further sum of £30 million has been earmarked by the government as a contribution to this charity. This brings the total contributions made by the government to devote to community care trust during the past 3 financial years to £134 million. In this respect, Mr. Speaker, I note statements from the Honourable Leader of the Opposition on television when asked questions by journalists in which he said he would not fund community care. I am very grateful to him, Mr. Speaker, for having made his position so clear. We entirely agree with him on that as on so much else. Because, Mr. Speaker, once again, a GSLP Liberal government is ensuring that community care is properly funded. Once again, Mr. Speaker, a GSLP Liberal government is protecting our elderly. And once again, Mr. Speaker, a GSLP Liberal government is honouring the generations that came before and the built the generations that we have today. Mr. Speaker, government revenue during the last financial year exceeded the original budget by around £24 million. As a reflection of the continuing growth in our economy, income tax receipts were up by around £8 million over the budgeted figure, and company tax receipts were up by around £9 million. In fact, year-on-year growth in respect of income tax and corporation tax amounted to 6 and 7.8% growth, respectively. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, in relation to both income tax and corporation tax, I want to highlight the remarkable growth that we have been able to achieve and how it has been achieved. In respect of income tax, for example, we have gone from a collection of £122 million in 2010-2011 to a collection of £144 million this year. That is an increase of £22 million or 18%, but at the same time, the tax rates have been decreasing. In the insurance industry, we collected £2.87 million of PAYE the last full financial year when members opposite were in administration, compared to £4.3 million this year. This represents an increase of 50% just in that sector. To be specific, as we look at financial services generally, the growth in PAYE receipts is being led by a growth in employee numbers. In October 2011, the number 3,109. By October 2014, the number has risen to 3,388. This represents a percentage growth of 9% in an already mature industry. In the gaming industry, we collected 16.3 million of PAYE in their last year, compared to £22.5 million this year, an increase of the figure of almost 40%. It's worth noting that the behind these collections in PAYE are the rising numbers of employees in the industry also. These can fluctuate in some measure depending on the corporate fortunes of one company or another, but the growth in the time since we were elected has been remarkable and resilient. Open contracts reported by the gaming regulator as of the 31st of October 2011, the date of the annual employment survey, reflect a total of 2,665 employees in the industry, October 2011. That number, Mr. Speaker, has now risen to 3,423, representing a growth of 28%, more than a quarter more employees in the industry in the time that we have been in administration. Mr. Speaker, before I move on to an analysis of corporation taxes, I want to report to the House that I have recently received the recommendations of the committee I established to advise on the personal tax offering of Gibraltar. I want to thank Nick Crew, Peter Montalifo, Peter Isola, Stephen Reyes, Freddie White, and Melo Friai for their hard work and diligence in the preparation of these recommendations. The government is presently considering their very detailed recommendations and expects to be in a position to work on the implementation of some of their more high-level proposals very soon. They have produced an excellent report and some very sensible recommendations which we will further stress them in order to be ready to progress matters in the direction I indicated would likely be necessary given recent international initiatives in respect of corporate taxes. Indeed, the effects of FATCA and other international measures may already be to affect individuals' ability to plan their tax affairs as much as those of the affairs of corporations, especially given the move towards more and greater tax transparency. And that transparency agenda means not just that individuals from large economies will see information provided to their own exchequers, but also individuals from small economies will see their information shared with their tax authorities also. I will later introduce a measure today to address these issues also. Mr. Speaker, then we can use a moment to move on to the analysis of corporate tax receipts. And in relation to corporation tax, Mr. Speaker, the growth has been even more remarkable in our time in office. And in insurance, we collected 1.8 million in 2011, growing to 22.6 million now, a growth of 1,155%. 1,155% growth in the corporate tax receipts from the insurance industry. In the gaming industry, we collected 7.98 million in 2011, compared to 33.42 million in the last financial year. That represents a growth of 318% growth, Mr. Speaker, in corporate tax receipts from the gaming industry. Indeed, in corporation tax revenues, that growth has been steep, from £29 million collected in 2011 to £89 million collected last year. That is a growth of 206%, Mr. Speaker. And it is that growth, Mr. Speaker, of 206% in corporation taxes and approximately 40% growth in income taxes that is principally delivering our economic growth and funding government expenditure. I'll just add, Mr. Speaker, that this has been achieved whilst not in any way skimping on rebates. We have paid approximately, Mr. Speaker, £28 million by way of rebates to personal and corporate taxpayers in the past 4 years. We, Mr. Speaker, are not hanging on to people's money. Importantly, Mr. Speaker, these increased collections of corporation and income taxes have occurred in the context not just of lower rates at the personal level and increased allowances as well, but also in the context of taxation reducing as a share of GDP. In fact, tax as a share of GDP has been reduced under the Biden administration from 13.5% in 2010-2011 to 10.6% today. As the organization repositions itself as an open and transparent financial services center with a competitive rate of tax acceptable to the OECD, the International Monetary Fund, and other objective international institutions, we are reaping the rewards of seeing real business come from here, which accrue and derive their profit here and are taxed here, and one of the principal drivers of sustainable economic growth. Too often people think growth is just in import people. People think of our economy as growing because of revenue from tobacco sales. Well, Mr. Speaker, they are wrong. In fact, import duty receipts are down 2.7% against the estimate, from £170 million estimated to £165.4 million of actual collections. In fact, the total for duties, taxes, and other receipts that have been of the analysis of consolidated fund account revenue is actually up from an estimate of £178.492 million to £180.831 million, or growth of 1.31%. But there is therefore no need to have a consensus over a revenue, but the import duty element is down, as I have indicated. Departmental expenditure, on the other hand, has been contained and has ended the year at less than £7 million over the original budget. Mr. Speaker, I'm very happy to be able to share that figure with the House and with the community as a whole, as that demonstrates the excellent and indeed remarkable control of expenditure, which has brought in the forecast outturn to within 1.6% of the estimate. So we have hit the target within 1.6% of the estimate. It is a figure you haven't heard from anyone about that not being anything other than an absolutely excellent figure, demonstrating real control of expenditure. Let us not forget that control of spending was not the forte of those who might now teach them. In the sense of capital projects, for example, Mr. Speaker, and IND expenditure, remember the 236% overspend on the airport, which went from 24 million to 84? Or the new prison? The now EWA position's own project, which started life as a 5.2 million project and then came in at £8.1 million, a 55% overspend. And the court, which resulted in an 82% overspend. So if you figure a 1.6% overspend in departmental expenditure, although in respect of recurrent and not capital expenditure, reflects remarkable spending discipline, which the members of the group have shown that they could not deliver. So the public won't want us to be taking any lessons from them on spending control, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, the recent Chamber of Commerce report suggested that the public finance debate might actually benefit from the adoption of some external measure of funding as if none applied. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the main statistics I am disclosing in the context of this debate, the revenue indicators which are internationally recognized as relevant in measuring public finances and the performance of any economy. I recently met with the president of the chairman, Mr. Christian Nugget, in order to consider with him his organization's wishes for this year, something which I have done since election with both the chamber and the Federation of Small Businesses. Christian has since confirmed that his position is that adequate comparatives are available in order for a proper analysis to be reliably undertaken, making like-for-like comparatives with past years, and that the adoption of these standards would potentially distort the ability to compare like-for-like. I agree with his conclusion, but we will continue to work with the chamber in identifying any appropriate new measure which may assist the public in fully being able to see through the distortion peddled by some, in order to try to obscure the outstanding success of our economy and the remarkably strong and resilient performance of our public finances. Mr. Speaker, I now move on to the revenue and expenditure budget for the current financial year. Estimated recurrent revenue for the year is budgeted at £559 million. This takes account of a significant increase in recurrent revenue achieved in the previous year, but is nevertheless a conservative estimate going forward. Mr. Speaker, just to ensure that everybody in our community understands the growth of revenue we have presided over in our public finances and fair terms since we took over, let us look at the exact growth in revenue. Mr. Speaker, revenue estimated by members opposite when in government for the year 2011-12 was £393 million. Today, at £559 million, the growth is of £166 million more. 70% growth of 42.2% in respect of government revenue in the time since we were elected. Perhaps the members of the can now start to understand why the government does have the money to carry out all this program. The overall recurrent expenditure budgeted for the year is £541 million, which reflects a modest increase over the previous financial year of around 4%. The Speaker, the government is therefore taking a very prudent course and conservatively projecting a recurrent budget surplus for this financial year of around £18 million. In this respect, Mr. Speaker, we always definitely prefer to under-promise and over-deliver as we pass this year elected so that we are never caught short. For the financial year 2014-2015, the government invested around £104 million on capital projects funded by the Improvement and Development Fund. Around £21 million was invested on work and equipment, and a further £83 million was invested in specific capital projects, including £10.2 million on the conversion and the refurbishment of the old Naval Hospital Dementia Facility, £11.5 million on the demolition and conversion of the old St. Bernard's Hospital into two new schools, £4.1 million on the St. Bernard's Catering Facility, £12.2 million on the 700-berth small boat marina, a total of £9 million was also provided in equity funding for the initial share requirements of the Gibraltar International Bank. Mr. Speaker, the expenditure budget of the Improvement and Development Fund during this financial year is around £95 million. The capital investment in working equipment is estimated around £90 million, and investments in other government projects total £75 million, which includes equity funding of £15.9 million from the Gibraltar International Bank, which has already been contributed, equity funding of £5 million for the University of Gibraltar, and funding to complete ongoing projects including £4.8 million for the continuing work on the 700-berth small boat area, £4.8 million for the demolition and conversion works of the old St. Bernard's Hospital into two new schools, £3.1 million for the St. Bernard's Catering Facility, and other projects include the development of Wellington Front, the pavilion of a new bathing pavilion, investments in infrastructure for our housing estate, and the relocation of a large number of MOD estates to enable the continued use by the MOD of further land and properties for use by our community. And that, Mr. Speaker, relates to land that we've done before we were elected. All of this, Mr. Speaker, represents a huge investment in our community for the long-term benefit of current and future generations and for future prosperity. And two new schools, Mr. Speaker. Not one, two. And in only 3.5 years. Well, Mr. Speaker, perhaps more schools, Mr. Speaker, than members of the provided in the time that they were in office for 16 years. So it would be foolish, Mr. Speaker, for anyone on the other side of the House to suggest we should have prioritized new schools over other projects, but we clearly have already done so. Which of the two schools that needed most work and immediately have reprovisioned them? An excellent track record in its own in the second education before even starting to talk about the mandatory post-credit degrees that we've now provided, the 47 new teachers, the arrangements with the Washington Center, and of course, the crowning glory in respect of our achievements in education in this first term, the new Gibraltar University, which will open its doors in September. The Honourable Minister for Justice has done an incredible job in respect of education. He really has been able to show his remarkable dedication in delivering a program that has eluded so many others in the past, in being now on the cusp of opening the University of Gibraltar, as well as delivering those two new schools and a 700-berth marina. That's an effort for any minister in less than 4 years, an achievement indeed, especially while also sharing the burden of his sector ministry. Mr. Speaker, there is also continued positive news in respect of the Gibraltar Savings Bank. As honourable members are aware, when this government took office, the reserves of the savings bank had fallen to almost zero, with the actual reserves of the bank at the end of March 2011 having fallen to just £1,444. The £17 million the bank had built up over the years has been taken into the consolidated fund by the previous administration. And Mr. Speaker, let me preface this part of my intervention by saying that I can understand why, Mr. Speaker. Because the honourable member, the honourable backbencher, when he did this, explained his logic. Now, as the bank's deposits are guaranteed by the government, there is no need for